Hello and welcome. Tonight we're going to discuss shareholder rights, and shareholders are the engine which drives any corporation because they're the owners. Now, if you remember, last time we talked about how you set up a corporation. We talked about pre-incorporation, where we talked about not only some definitions, but also what are promoters? They're the people who go out there and promote the idea of what the corporation is going to do. Remember, a business is business corporation is a corporation that has been founded to conduct a business for profit. And the promoters go out and promote that business. They say, hey, we want to do this enterprise. And they also do something incredibly important. They sell subscriptions. The subscriptions are the ability to purchase at the time the corporation comes into existence, the stock of the corporation, and they sell that to future investors. We also talked about the process of actually taking that idea that the promoters are promoting and incorporating it, actually doing the incorporation. That's done by people called incorporators. And we talked about what the incorporators do. They sign the certificate of incorporation. They draft the certificate of incorporation, which has certain things that it has to have in it under the business corporation law. Because remember, corporations are, without question, creatures of statute. And they have to follow the business corporation law in New York in order to be properly founded. And the certificate of incorporation is a instrument that sets out what the corporation will be doing, who it is, the name of it, and that gets filed with the Office of Secretary of State together with a $125 filing fee, and it's got to be signed by the incorporators who have to be over age 18. Lastly, we talked about the organizational meeting, because even though a corporation comes into legal existence at the time that the certificate is accepted for filing by the Office of Secretary of State, the corporation is not perfected. That means it can't operate as a corporation legally until you have an organizational meeting. And that organizational meeting is pivotal, because at that organizational meeting, you issue the shares. The shareholders literally will buy the shares that they have subscribed from the promoters, and they'll put the money into the corporation so it has capital assets. They also, at that organizational meeting, these shareholders that have now purchased the shares will elect a board of directors. And remember, the board of directors is the governing body of the corporation. Unlike a sole proprietorship or a partnership, the owners of the corporation, which are the shareholders, do not manage a corporation. And remember, it has centralized management, which means the board of directors manage the corporation. They're the policy entity of the corporation. And it's a Republican representative governance structure. Just like Congress is, you have the voters who elect the people to the House and the Senate, and they make the laws by means of legislation. Well, the same thing happens with a corporation. The shareholders elect the members of the board of directors, and they make the policies of the corporation. Now, one of the first things after the board of directors is hired, they appoint officers. Officers are the day-to-day executors of the policy of the directors. They are employees of the corporation, because they are the ones who get hired to do the roles. You have chief executive officer, the president, you have the secretary and treasurer, the chief financial officer. All of these are the, and all the vice presidents are all the officers. And the last thing that will be done on the corporation's organizational meeting, if you remember, is to adopt bylaws. Whereas the certificate of incorporation that gets filed with the Office of Secretary of State by the incorporators is like the constitution of the corporation. The bylaws are like its individual statutes. That is a series of directives that the board of directors do. They explain what is going on with the corporation, what its policies are, and those bylaws are passed by a majority vote of the board of directors. And there are, again, like the statutes of the corporation. The certificate of incorporation is like the Constitution. Bylaws cannot conflict with the certificate. They have to be in compliance with that, just like statutes can't conflict with the Constitution. And lastly, we, instead of doing a case, we did a class exercise. So you want to start a business. We went from soup to nuts. How do you decide what kind of business organization that you want? And once you decide that, what steps do you have to take in order to form that corporation and get it on its way as a business organized for profit? That was last week. This week, we're going to jump right into what we call shareholders' rights. Shareholders are the engine of the corporation. They're the ones who get everything running because obviously they're the owners. They're the ones who buy the capital stock. They're the ones who vote for the board of directors, which is the policy-making entity. They're the ones who are the driving force behind the corporation because of their voting. Remember, they do not manage the corporation, but they get it in motion by means of buying the stock, holding the stock, and then voting for the board. Okay, we're going to start out tonight with corporate finance. What does it mean to have shares and bonds and capital structure? We're going to talk about the shareholders themselves. What are their rights? What are their liabilities? And what about their voting? And lastly, we're going to wrap up with a very important case. It's Beaumont versus American Can Company. It's a very famous case. It talks about the importance that you cannot diminish a share. The share is that portion of the corporation represented by the stock that you have, and you cannot over time diminish it. So if you own 1/200th of the corporation with your share, that is always going to be 1/200th of the corporation. You cannot turn around and suddenly make it 1/1000th of the corporation. It's always got to be the same. It cannot be diminished. That's about our court case. It's an interesting case. It was about a merger. Okay. Let's jump right in. We're going to do a little bit of repetition because remember, repetition is the mother of learning. And what was the definition that we used the last time for a corporation, which is out of Black's Law Dictionary? Remember, it's an artificial person under the law. It's got its own separate legal standing. It's created under the authority of law. It's a statutory creature. In New York State, that's the business corporation law. It has an existence that's distinct from its associated individuals. That means the corporation, as being the artificial person under the law, is not the same as its directors or its employees or its officers or its shareholders. It is a distinct legal entity. It has a duration, which could be perpetual, forever, or for a term of years. It acts under centralized management as a unit, with the board of directors who are elected by the shareholders acting as the policy body upon their election from the shareholders. The board of directors is the policy-making entity, and it directs the officers to execute that policy. And it operates within the scope of powers confirmed by law. It is a creature of statute. The statute specifically says what it can and cannot do. And within those parameters, the certificate of incorporation is drafted, so you have a constitution for that organization. There are certain principal characteristics of a corporation. All corporations have these. And in order to be a corporation, you have to have them. The first and foremost is the most important, and that's limited liability. It means that whoever invests in this corporation, they know that the only exposure they have is the amount of their investment. They're not going to go against them personally for any other losses of the corporation. That what the investment is the limited amount that they will have to lose if there's a problem. They could gain a far more, but that all they can lose is the amount of their investment. And that's what limited liability is. And remember, it comes from the sovereign immunity of the king when the kings were giving these charters over originally, all the way back from Rome and then to the British monarchs. And then today, when you have them being a creature of statute, it's a residuary type of legal recognition that the in order to encourage capital investment, and it draws capital like a magnet, it draws money into the corporation. Why? People want to know what their exposure to risk is. And if they can limit it, all the better. That's what I'm going to invest in. If I know that's all I'm going to lose, that's the place I want to put it in, because the gain is unlimited, but the loss, I know what it's going to be. And I know they're not going to come after me for something more that I wasn't prepared for. So that limited liability, the most important part of corporation. Again, because it's an artificial person under the law, remember the case that came out with Woodward versus Dartmouth College, where it was recognized under United States law, under the Constitution, that you have a corporate separate personhood of corporations. And they have entity powers expressed through that corporate personhood. It's centrally managed. The shareholders don't manage it. They elect the board of directors, who in turn appoint the officers. That's how it's managed. It is not run by those who own it. It's run by people through a representative Republican form of governance. It has a continuity of existence. It can go on forever if that is the way that the certificate of incorporation states, and it can go on for a period of years, if that's what the certificate of incorporation states, but it has a continuity of existence. Its interests, primarily its shares, its stock, are freely transferable. If the shareholder doesn't want to hold that interest anymore, they can sell it, they can gift it, they can put it through their will and through their estate. Those interests are freely transferable. Remember, there's an exception there with respect to closed corporations. You still can sell your interest or give it away, but it's to a limited source of individuals, because closed corporations limit who can own the corporation. So as a result, public corporations, where anybody can buy it, you can transfer it to anybody who's over age 18, or over age 21, rather, in New York State. And closed corporation only to those people who are entitled to buy the stock. You know, if it's a family business, only somebody named McGillicuddy. If it's a owned by its employees, you have to sell it to somebody else who's an employee. Now, all corporations have a statutory source of authority. You have to be consistent in New York State with the business corporation law. You got to follow that statutory source. That's how the corporation is able to come into existence, because the state constitution says we're going to pass a general incorporation statute, and that's why you get to incorporate. And lastly, it's got a constitutional status. Corporations enjoy constitutional rights, including the right of free speech, the right of free association, due process rights. They don't have the Privileges and Immunities Clause, which says that you can't discriminate against people from one state to another. Under the corporation exception on that, you can discriminate against a corporation that's not a domestic corporation. That means it's now a state corporation. And it also doesn't have certain rights that are reserved for natural people, such as voting for president of the United States. You can't do that as a constitutional matter. But almost every other constitutional right we have, you have as a corporation. Okay. Let's jump right in. Remember, this is going to be about corporate finance. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. How do you get the corporation up and running financially? Because that's one of the things that is most critical, because you're operating a business for profit. And in order to do that, that business needs to have money. Well, how do you raise the money? You sell shares of the corporation. What is a share? What is this stock thing that we call a share? It's one of the definite number of equal parts into which the capital stock of a corporation is divided. So if you turn around and have the corporation be able to issue 1,000 shares, each share is 1/1,000th of the value of that corporation. And it represents an equity ownership interest in the company. It's in the corporation. Now, there's different kinds of stock. There's different kinds of shares. The most important kind of stock, and stock and share is interchangeable. They're the same thing. There's no difference. Share is a more descriptive term, because obviously it's a share of the company. Stock comes from when people actually operate in a business. Stock is their produce of the company that they have. So if I sell shoes, my stock is all the shoes that I have to sell. Well, in a corporation, it is your share of the company that you sell to investors. Common stock, as it's called, is a share in a company that entitles the holder to vote. It's the most important, most valuable form of share in a corporation. It entitles the owner not only to vote, which is a critical right, but also to receive dividends and also to be paid off with the assets of the company upon liquidation. So when the company finishes up, when it wraps up and ends its existence, it gets the proceeds. So common stock does all of that. It is the most valuable stock because of its voting rights. You get to vote for the directors with common stock. Preferred stock stands in first in line for dividends. Excuse me, but it's not voting stock. You don't get a vote with preferred. You get the dividends first, but you do not get to vote. Treasury stock is stock that is either issued and then withdrawn back because it's reacquired from the initial issuance, or it's stock that was authorized that was never issued. So it's stock basically held in reserve for future sale by the corporation. So if you are authorized as a corporation to issue 1,000 shares and you only issue and sell 500 of those, the 500 shares that have not been issued and sold are your treasury stock. And that is a future reserve of stock that can be sold at a later time. or can be cashed in. It does not get a vote. Why? Because it hasn't been issued out to a shareholder. Or if it has, it's been withdrawn back in and the shareholder no longer owns it. So as a result of that, your voting is based on the 500 shares that have been out there and issued and in the hands of the shareholders. Shares are represented when you go to buy them by signed certificates. They are signed by the officers of the corporation. But remember, they're only evidence of ownership. Why? Because even if you get a stock certificate, you have to be registered with the secretary of the corporation in order to vote your shares. It's like registering to vote in a political election. You have to be registered with the corporation. They have to know who is casting those votes. So in order to basically activate your shares and make them real, you have to register yourself with the secretary of the corporation. Every share of common stock entitles the owner to one vote. It is one share, one vote. Whereas in our political system, it's one person, one vote. If you own 100 shares, you get 100 votes because each share is entitled to one vote under the business corporation law. Now, that's shares. What about bonds? Bonds are another mechanism by which you can raise money, excuse me, as a corporation. But a bond is not an equity interest. By buying a bond, you're not buying the company. You're actually, when you buy a bond, you're loaning the corporation money. It's not purchasing, it's not purchasing the company. You're giving them a loan. So by doing that, the corporation is actually taking out a debt. And you are the lender. There's two types of borrowing that a corporation can do. There's short-term borrowing and long-term borrowing. Short-term borrowing is generally done by a corporation going to a bank. And they say, I want a loan. Well, those are not generally bonds. You can have a short-term bond, but they're rare. Bonds are generally a long-term instrument. They're a security. They say if for a specific interest rate, you will take out a loan from you, the corporation will take out a loan from you for a period of time. Let's say it's 10 years. They will pay you X dollars a month over 10 years. By the time the 10 years is over, they will have paid back the principal and all the interest. Let's say your bond is worth $100,000. Let's say the interest rate is 10%. Over the 10-year period, you're not only going to get the $100,000 back, but you're going to get that 10% per year as a payment every month as well. Bonds can be paid over time. Every month they're going to make a payment, or all at the end. Depends when they're matured. Those agreements are contracts. And the bond repayment plan is under the contract. Bonds come in two forms. You have bearer bonds and registered bonds. A registered bond has your name and address of the person who purchases it. And that's recorded by the corporation. They have to pay that person and only that person the proceeds of the bond. You also have bearer bonds. Bearer bonds say, if you have that certificate in your hand, we pay you. You may not have been the guy who originally bought it from the corporation. You bought it from somebody else who bought it from the corporation. A bearer bond is an instrument that gets paid to whoever is holding that certificate, that bond certificate, and presents it to the corporation. The registered bond is registered with the corporation, and they send you the money based on that registration. Okay. Let's talk about capital. Capital is the life's blood of a corporation. It's the money it raises in order to operate. And that money comes from multiple sources. First and foremost, it comes from stock. You sell stock to investors. You sell them shares. They pay for those shares, and the corporation gets the money. The capital of the corporation refers to all of its net assets. Shares of stock are only one of them. Such assets include the monies received from stock, issued to shareholders, monies from bonds, issued to bondholders, profit from income from operation of the business, and property owned and acquired of the corporation. All of those things together constitute the assets or the capital of the corporation. Now, how do we value stock? How do you know how much that's worth? The par value is the amount per share specified on the stock certificate at the time it's issued to the subscriber. So if it has a par value of $10 a share, that's how much the original subscriber will pay for that share of stock. Sometimes stock can be issued without a par value. It's whatever the going rate is that the corporation is willing to sell it at. The book value is taken by having all of the value of the corporation and then dividing it by the number of shares. So if the corporation has 100,000 shares of stock, but $1 million in the bank, the book value is $10 a share. That may or may not have been the par value, but that's the book value. The market value is what somebody's willing to pay for that share on the free market. Frequently, that's far higher than the par value or the book value. If a corporation looks like it's going to make a lot of money, then the investor is willing to pay far more for it. And even though I only paid $10 on its issuance, someone will come along and say, Bob, I want to buy your share. I'll give you $100 for it. That's the market value. Now remember, another source of capital structure is the bonds. We talked about that. Issuance of the bonds, by the way, is a matter completely within the board of directors' discretion. They don't have to issue them. They can when and if they want to. Dividends are a pro rata payment made by the corporation to equity shareholders. You have to own the corporation in order to get that. Now, you can be a preferred non-voting shareholder and still get a dividend. But you have to be a shareholder. You can be a common stock shareholder. You can be a preferred stock shareholder. They get dividends. Excuse me. Interestingly enough, a preferred stock shareholder, even though they don't have voting rights, stands in line first to get the dividend. So if there's not enough money in the corporation to declare a dividend for everybody, it can be declared just for preferred shareholders. The corporation's ability to declare a dividend is based on their financial position. If they've made a lot of money in the past year, they can declare a dividend. Why would a board of directors declare a dividend? Why would they give away their profit? Why don't they just turn around and reinvest it in the company? Well, sometimes they do. Again, it's within board discretion. But remember, directors are elected. Who votes for them? Shareholders. So if you have happy shareholders by sharing the profits with them, by sending them a check, and the check is not just an increased value of the stock, it is actually a check that they send them. They send them money. If they give them that dividend, you have a happy shareholder. Happy shareholders tend to re-elect board members. So that's one of the reasons why board members will actually declare a dividend. Excuse me. Now, stock is issued pursuant to the certificate of incorporation. The certificate says what authorized stock is issued upon the commencement of the corporation. Now, remember, the certificate of incorporation can be amended. So if it originally issued 100,000 shares and they want to issue more, they can amend that certificate of incorporation to say they can issue 200,000 shares. But just remember, if they issue more stock, they have to issue at least some of that stock to the original shareholders. Why? Because you cannot diminish the value of a share. It's still, if I own 10% of the company and they issue more shares, at the end of the new issuance, I still have to own 10% of the company. I can have more shares than I originally started out at that 10%. But guess what? I have to own 10%. It's one of the reasons why when they issue the stock, they generally hold some back. They don't sell all their stock. Why? Because on that, if I own 10% of the corporation, and they still have half of it to issue, when they issue that, guess what? That doesn't have to increase my amount of the corporation because of the fact that that is still authorized stock, and it's on a comparison basis of the authorized number, not of the actual stock that was issued. How are shares acquired? One of two ways. You can either buy it by direct subscription from a promoter at the time the corporation is formed, or you can buy it from a pre-existing shareholder. So if I bought my stock on the day that the corporation was formed by means of a subscription, I can turn around and sell it to somebody else at a later time. That's known as a transfer of shares. And the transfer of shares is able to happen freely on a corporation. Unless you have a scenario where it is a closed corporation, you have free transferability of your shares. It's one of your rights as a shareholder. When you go to transfer or to purchase stock, the sale or purchase of stock is subject to the statute of frauds. That means it has to have a writing signed by the party to be charged. It's got to be in writing. So if I go to buy stock, I have to have a written contract to buy that. And the person who sells it to me has to have a written contract to sell it. Absent that, it's not a good sale. It has to be in writing and signed by the party to be charged. No writing, incidentally, is required when a broker agreement occurs. Pardon me. The broker agreement is not the sale of the stock. So if I hire a broker to buy and sell stock for me, that doesn't have to be in writing. But when he does buy or sell stock for me, I have to have a writing with that sale or purchase. Remember, two major kinds of stock. You have common stock, which is voting stock, preferred stock, which stands first in line for those dividends, but which is not given a right to vote. Common stock has a one share, one vote interest, and it represents a fractional share of the corporation. So when I buy common stock and there's 100,000 shares, one share is 1/100,000 of the value of that corporation. Now, as we said, with publicly traded corporations, that means it's not a closed corporation, there's free transferability. I can buy and I can sell my stock to any other person who's above the age of 21 years of age, any place, anytime. It is freely transferable. You can do it individually, or it can also be done on an exchange. The Securities and Exchange Commission governs stocks sold on an exchange. So if I buy it on the New York Stock Exchange, it is transferred by means of that exchange. The Business Corporation Law and the Martin Act, which is a state law, govern that regulation, and we'll talk about that in a future lecture. You have free transferability, whether it's person to person or by means of an exchange, you have free transferability on publicly traded corporations. Those are corporations without a limitation on who can buy their stock. Closed corporations, on the other hand, have limited transferability. I can sell it to anyone who has a legal ability to buy that stock. That is within the certificate of incorporation that says only employees of the company can turn around and buy the stock. Only a person with a certain last name can buy that stock. So as a result of that, you have limited transferability. With a public corporation, free transferability. With a closed corporation, it's limited by who can buy the stock. The mechanics of a transfer is represented by the certificate. You actually deliver over the certificate. You have to have a writing for it. Generally, the certificate is signed as part of the writing. To secure the voting rights, however, even after you deliver the certificate, even after you have that writing evidencing that you are transferring the stock, you have to register it with the Secretary of the Corporation, or otherwise your voting rights are not able to be exercised. So it's a two-step dance. You have to transfer it over in writing to that other party in return for consideration. It is a contract. And then you have to register it by taking that certificate and demonstrating that this is evidence of my ownership. that I am now the new stockholder and I get a right to vote. That's it for this lecture. Hopefully, we let you know everything you needed to know with respect to corporate finance. Next time, we're on to shareholder rights, and we'll talk to you in a few moments. Thanks so much.